Flood Wall Street is such an important action that I encourage everybody to go down and show their support on. We need to strike at the heart of the economic paradigm. Climate change, tar sands, you know, all of these things, the root problem to it is our economic paradigm. Naomi's book talks about it. We need to engage and to take direct action against the financiers of the global climate crisis.
On Sunday at 7 in the morning, there's a major Indigenous ceremony inside Central Park, and there are water ceremonies on Saturday here in New York City.
That's correct. We encourage people to come down to the opening ceremony of the People's Climate March. It starts at 9 a.m., Columbus Circle. There is a water ceremony on the Hudson River as well.
And the website people go to find out all this information?
IndigenousRising.org is a website. You can get information at idlenomore.com. And, of course, all the information is compiled on peoplesclimatemarch.org.
We're going to leave it there. Clayton Thomas Muller, Indigenous Tar Sands campaigner, Reverend Dr. Serene Jones, head of the Union Theological Seminary, Liddy Knockbeal, Global Campaign to Demand Climate Justice in from the Philippines. And, of course, Democracy Now! Will be there on Sunday. Check our website, democracynow.org. From Sunday, 10:30 to 1:30 Eastern Time, we'll be broadcasting live to the world. A very happy birthday to Amy Littlefield. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aramate, Nermin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Emma Kofani, Masood, Rabbi Karen, Dina Gesder, Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
The time is now 5:01. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News.
Soul music of the 60s and 70s will be presented in a series beginning in September on the 13th and 20th from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m., hosted by the legendary former KBOO radio host and journalist, Miss Lanita Duke. During the last quarter of the 20th century, Miss Duke hosted a weekly program from the grassroots. She pioneered protest music and commentary through a Black perspective lens. The program tendered both support and controversy, framing national discourse around identity and social change. The long-awaited return comes with classic soul music and jazz that showcase artists Billie Holiday, Curtis Mayfield, Gil Scott-Heron, and important artists of the era. So tune in for this special series, Saturdays, September 13th and 20th, from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m., The Motif.
John Coltrane. Every September, KBOO Community Radio celebrates the birthday of John Coltrane with an all-night marathon honoring Coltrane's life, his legacy, his influence on musicians around the world, but mostly his music. Tune into KBOO this Friday night, beginning at 10 p.m. as we celebrate John Coltrane's 88th birthday with an 8-hour marathon, rare recordings, interviews, and some new releases. That's this Friday night from 10 p.m. until 6 a.m. Coltrane Night, a September tradition only here on KBOO Portland. And remember to join us the following Tuesday night, September 23rd, John Coltrane's 88th birthday, as KBOO Night at the Clinton features The World According to Coltrane, beginning at 7 p.m. Tuesday night, September 23rd, a celebration of the 88th birthday of John Coltrane.
Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News, made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Lent's International Farmers Market, a program of Zinger Farm, every Sunday through October at Southeast 92nd and Foster from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Lent's Farmers Market offers the Food Scouts Farmers Market Club for Kids, a community table, cooking demonstrations, and live music. More at lentsfarmersmarket.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, as activists gather in New York for the largest ever climate justice march, a local activist has locked herself to an oil train terminal to protest the expansion of oil transport in the region.
And Portlanders gathered to demand justice for a 16-year-old tased by Portland police last weekend.
As Scots vote down independence after the British government threatens to cut them off economically.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, September 19th, 2014. I'm Paul Rowland.
And I'm Liam Delta. The Oregon Health Authority is expanding a health advisory after preliminary test results show a toxic algae bloom in the stretch of the Willamette River flowing through downtown Portland. Officials with the Public Health Division say the advisory now extends from Ross Island to the south end of Sovie Island. Public health officials recommend that people avoid all contact with Willamette River water in this stretch of the river, and that pets be kept away from the water as well. This includes avoiding swallowing or inhaling water droplets and avoiding skin contact. Drinking water directly from this stretch of the Willamette River is especially dangerous at this time. The public will be alerted when the concern no longer exists. A preliminary test by one of the laboratories, Aquatic Scientific Resource, confirmed the blue-green algae as Microcystis. This type of algae blooms toxins that are harmful to humans and animals. The advisory threshold for Microcystis is 40,000 cells per milliliter of water. Preliminary counts indicate Microcystis is present in the Willamette River at over 2 million cells per milliliter. Accidental swallowing of water containing these toxins may produce such symptoms as numbness, tingling, dizziness, weakness, diarrhea, nausea, cramps, and fainting. Symptoms usually occur in less than 24 hours. The source of the contamination remains unknown.
Yesterday afternoon, Portland Rising Tide and allies from Columbia County erected a 20-foot-tall tripod of steel poles occupied by Sonny Glover to blockade the Port Westward oil terminal. After 9 hours, the blockade was finally removed after the police dangerously cut the tripod's legs one at a time while Sonny's neck was locked to one of the poles. Sonny is safe and was released from jail this afternoon. This summer, Rising Tide collectives have blockaded oil train facilities in Washington and Oregon 5 times. They say they're working toward mass mobilizations that will significantly impede the ability of any new fossil fuels terminals to be built in the Pacific Northwest, and for a just transition that will dismantle existing infrastructure. Climate justice activists joined local farmers and oil train opponents from all over Columbia County for yesterday's action. A banner suspended from the tripod read, "Oil Trains Fuel Climate Chaos." A company called Global Partners, based in Massachusetts, currently ships oil by rail from the fracking fields of the Bakken Shale to Columbia County. From there, it is loaded onto ocean-going vessels bound for West Coast refineries. The facility was constructed with public clean energy loans and tax credits to manufacture ethanol in 2008. The owners declared bankruptcy almost immediately, and in a twist of irony, it became a crude oil terminal. Dozens of people joined Sonny Glover during the 9-hour blockade.
As 100,000 people gather in New York this week for an historic march to combat climate change, a new report by Food and Water Watch has called for a complete ban on the natural gas extraction process known as fracking. The report lays out the large number of dangerous environmental effects caused by the shale gas extraction. At the UN Climate Summit this weekend, politicians, industry stakeholders, and even some environmental groups are expected to promote natural gas as a, quote, bridge fuel to a renewable energy future. But the practice has a devastating impact on climate, water, air, and communities. Natural gas fracturing, or fracking, extracts oil and natural gas by injecting large volumes of water, sand, and toxic chemicals deep underground. The practice has been linked to earthquakes, groundwater contamination, birth defects, and health issues. Research has found that shale drilling has the potential to unleash massive amounts of methane gas, which will accelerate the climate crisis. The Food and Water Watch report cites the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which estimates that methane from drilling and fracking will trap 87 times more heat than carbon dioxide in the next 20 years, if current plans move forward. One of the lead scientists on the report says that gas wells are like chimneys in the earth, and what they leak goes straight into our atmosphere. Coinciding with the release of the report and the climate march, the group has launched a social media campaign under the hashtag #DontFrackOurClimate. They hope to pressure lawmakers to enact a national fracking ban.
A group of Portlanders are gathered right now outside the Justice Center in downtown Portland. They are calling for justice for two brothers who were harassed, beaten, tased, and arrested last Saturday night by the Portland police. In that incident on Saturday night, Portland police showed up in force with multiple cars and officers when two homeowners called the police to complain about a group of teenagers gathered in the neighborhood around midnight on Saturday. When police arrived, they began questioning 16-year-old Ty Garul, who asked why he was being targeted. The police are seen on tape hitting the 16-year-old and then tasing him, despite no indication that the teenager was resisting. A group of people gathered around the scene of the police tasing of the 16-year-old boy late Saturday night in North Portland began to question the police behavior. One of those who complained, 20-year-old Giovanni Dimitri Garul, cried that police had targeted his little brother for no reason and that they should take him instead. Eventually, the police did take Giovanni into custody and released his 16-year-old brother. After a video of the incident was posted on Facebook, Police Chief Mike Reese says that the Bureau's Professional Standards Division will review the incident. But activists say that they don't trust the police internal review process. KBOO's Jamie Partridge is at the protest right now and joins us live from the scene. Hello, Jamie, you there?
I'm here. I'm actually at Alberta Park in Northeast Portland, and there's a couple dozen people gathering ready to kick off a march to the Northeast Precinct. And I'm going to turn you over to the main organizer, whose name is Sean, to give you the story.
Okay.
All right? Here's Sean. Hello?
Yeah, hi. So tell us what's going on right now.
So we're down at Alberta Park. We're just hanging around before we get things going. And, yeah, that's what's happening right now.
Uh-huh. Can you about how many people are gathered there?
There's about 20 to 30 folks.
Uh-huh. And is there any police presence there?
Police keep buzzing by, but none actually there waiting and ready.
So what brings you out to protest the Portland police?
Well, for me personally, police as an institution are founded upon white supremacy. And so as a community, we cannot put up with this. Ty Garul almost became another Michael Brown, another Trayvon Martin, another Keaton Notice, and many, many more names. And so we can never tolerate this from our police force. We just can't. It's life or death.
And so what do you think should be done to address the issue of racial profiling by Portland police?
Abolish the police.
Well, short of that.
Oh, no, I go for gold. That's what we should do. Abolish the police.
Fair enough.
We don't need them in our communities. All they do is kill our children.
So how can other people get involved?
Well, they can start by coming down to the rally. Or they could just talk to folks, befriend folks, get word-to-mouth events. No website is put up yet, but hopefully we will have a website on WordPress that will be titled abolishpolice.wordpress.com. So keep an eye out for that if you want to see more.
Okay. Any other thoughts that you'd like to share with us before we move on?
Well, I suggest getting over here because it's going to be fun. And keep on keeping on.
Don't
take any shit from the police.
And, okay, we've been speaking with protesters on the scene right now in downtown Portland calling for justice for the two brothers harassed, tased, and arrested by Portland police last Saturday night.
18 Portland police recruits are set to start a 12-week advanced academy next month. They'll be the first class of officers to break in the police bureau's new training center. The complex in Northeast Portland includes two 12-lane indoor firing ranges, a mock village for scenario-based training, and two mat rooms for defensive tactics exercises. Portland police also expect outside law enforcement agencies to rent out parts of the complex for their own training. Portland Police Chief Mike Reese, standing outside the building Thursday afternoon for an official ribbon-cutting ceremony, called the opening a, quote, defining moment for the police bureau and the city of Portland, unquote. The city bought the property located near the airport in April 2012 for $6.5 million. Remodeling began in December and is almost complete. The total cost of buying and renovating the site came to $15 million and is being financed through bonds over 10 years. The center is estimated to cost about $395,000 annually to operate and maintain. This is just one use of the millions of dollars provided by the federal government for expanded law enforcement activities in Oregon.
This week, the U.S. Census Bureau released comprehensive reports on nationwide and state poverty in 2013. Behind the numbers are millions of Americans struggling with poverty that affects their lives 24 hours a day. 5 years after the Great Recession officially ended, many people remain in poverty across the country and here in Oregon. Whether an individual or family is classified as poor depends on family composition. A family of four was defined as poor if its income was less than $23,834. The poverty rate for Oregon improved somewhat from just over 17% in 2012 to 16.7% in 2013. The groups with highest poverty rates in Oregon in 2013 were American Indian and Alaska Native, with a rate of over 31%, followed by African Americans at 30%. In Washington County, poverty continues to persist. The share of the county's population living in poverty in 2013 stayed at 10.9%, which is exactly the same as 2012. Overall, the poverty rate in Oregon remains higher than the national rate of 14.5%. Although the stock market has seen robust gains, most Americans depend principally on their wages for income and haven't shared Wall Street's recovery.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for a look behind the week's top news with Counterspin, produced by the watchdog group Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. This will be followed by Bread and Roses at 6. At 7, Hard Knock Radio, news, views, and hip-hop. Tomorrow's weather in the Portland area will be hot and sunny again with a high of 91. Sunday will be sunny as well with a high of 88. You can join KBOO at our annual meeting tomorrow afternoon, Saturday, September 20th, 2014, from 1 to 4 p.m. It will be held at the Lotus Seed, 6 Northeast Tillamook Street in Portland. Or find us at the Cascade Media Convergence all weekend long. More information on both events can be found on the KBOO website at kboo.fm. Today in history, on September 19th, 1676, the colonial city of Jamestown was burned to the ground by the forces of Nathaniel Bacon during Bacon's Rebellion.
It is coming up on 5:19 in the afternoon, and it is time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Let's take another cruise down the narrow byways and around the twisting turns that form Senator Ted Cruz's mind. The first right turn on our road trip brings us to a sweeping view of Ted's Energy Renaissance Act, a proposal so studded with fossil fuel favors that it should be titled the ExxonMobil Relief Act. For example, it bans the federal government from ever imposing regulations on fracking. He also includes a congressional edict to approve the Keystone XL pipeline, plus a requirement that any new EPA regulations must get a vote of approval from Congress. as well as a nifty plan to alleviate Native American poverty by opening up their tribal lands to oil drilling. But let's cruise past that and go off-road on this obscure money trail. It leads to an expansive new opening in our election laws that Cruz hopes to carve out, making it simpler for plutocratic billionaires to outright purchase lawmakers. Like, for example, him. Ted's bill would, quote, allow unlimited direct contributions by citizens to candidates in federal elections. Good grief, this is the Koch brothers' wet dream act, for it legalizes bribery. They could openly write huge checks to politicians in exchange for the politicians promising to do political favors. Favors like what, you ask? Just take a hard right turn from Ted's bribe a lawmaker scheme and you'll come upon a bright flashing light representing an idea for a huge corporate favor that popped out of his head in July. He proposes to force the government to begin selling off our national parks, forests, wildlife areas, and other treasured natural resources, turning over these public lands to mining, drilling, and logging conglomerates, such as Koch Industries. This is Jim Hightower saying, you never know what's in Ted's head until you go cruising through it.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
Voters in Scotland last night voted down a referendum that would have made the nation independent of Great Britain. The final count was 55% opposed to independence and 45% in favor. An estimated 85% of eligible voters turned up for the referendum. But the push for independence by the Scottish people was unsuccessful. Scotland was absorbed by Britain 300 years ago and has a tight economic connection with Britain, despite maintaining a strong national identity. A number of banks threatened to pull out of Scotland if the people voted for independence, and the British government used scare tactics to warn Scottish people that they would lose standing in world markets if they left the United Kingdom. Alex Salmond, the head of the Scottish Nationalist Party, which led the charge for the Yes campaign, conceded defeat in the early hours of Friday. Salmond said that the overall campaign was a triumph for the democratic process and for participation in politics in Scotland. For his part, British Prime Minister David Cameron welcomed the vote against independence. He said he would honor promises made during the campaign, including giving Scottish lawmakers more control over taxes, spending, and social services. He added that the debate over Scottish self-rule or deeper reforms should now be put to rest.
And now we hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. 1,400 organizations are supporting the People's Climate March in New York City this Saturday. It's being billed as the largest climate march in history, demanding action to protect the world from the impact of climate change caused by human pollution. Organized labor is represented by the CWA, Connecticut chapters of the AFL-CIO and SEIU, IBEW Local 3, Teamsters Joint Council 16, National Nurses United, UAW Region 9, AFSCME's DC 37, and TWU Local 100, among others. The march is for a future with good jobs, clean air, and healthy communities for all. Demands include a world with an economy that works for people and for the planet. Labor backers say that climate change must be considered a labor and social justice issue. The AFL-CIO, SEIU, and the American Federation of Teachers co-sponsored a rally in Washington, D.C. Thursday demanding no cuts in Social Security and Medicare. American Federation of Teachers President Randy Weingarten says Social Security and Medicare are under attack by Republicans peddling schemes like privatization, vouchers, and raising the eligibility ages, all designed to cut the benefits working Americans have paid for all their working lives.
Social Security and Medicare is our safety net. They try to divide. They try to say somebody has a pension. Why do they have it? They try to make it a race to the bottom, not a lifting all boats to the top. They often will say, like Paul Ryan, you know, we can't afford everything. Really? You can't afford the future? If we want to keep Medicare and Social Security, what do we have to do in November?
The Teamsters are urging FedEx to stop paying for top executives' personal taxes on stock compensation. The union says ISS, the country's leading proxy voting advisor, is recommending FedEx shareholders vote to support the Teamster-supported shareholder proposal on stock taxes at FedEx. The Teamsters say the company has cut pensions and raised medical care costs for workers while continuing to lavish executives with perks like paying the taxes they owe on stock compensation. In New York, Suffolk County Sheriff Vincent DeMarco has decided to end cooperation with the Immigration and Customs Enforcement holds. The holds are sometimes placed on immigrants held in county jails under the Secure Communities Law. Federal courts have found that honoring these holds is optional for local law enforcement. The Suffolk County Sheriff no longer honors those holds unless the feds have a warrant from a judge. The New York Civil Liberties Union praised the sheriff's decision for refusing to unlawfully detain people in violation of civil liberties. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
And now the latest news and developments from the occupied territories in Palestine from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Welcome to This Week in Palestine, a service of the International Middle East Media Center at www.imemc.org for September 13th to the 19th, 2014. This week, while Palestinians are getting ready to resume indirect talks with Israel, two Palestinians killed in Gaza when an Israeli weapon exploded near them. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Let's begin our weekly report as usual with an nonviolent activities organized in the West Bank. On Friday, at least a dozen civilians were injured and many others were treated for the effects of tear gas inhalation when Israeli troops attacked anti-wall and settlement protests organized at a number of West Bank villages. IMEMC's Majd Bajali reports.
On Friday, protests were organized at the villages of Bilayin, Nalin, and the Nabi Saleh in central West Bank. Another protest were organized in southern West Bank village of Al-Masara near Bethlehem. In Nabi Saleh, Israeli soldiers attacked anti-wall and settlements protesters before even leaving the village. A number of protesters were injured by rubber-coated steel bullets fired by Israeli troops. Meanwhile, many other civilians were treated from the effects of tear gas inhalation when soldiers invaded the village and fired tear gas at residents' homes. Elsewhere, residents and their supporters in the nearby Bilayin and Na'nin villages reached the Israeli wall built on lands taken from local farmers before soldiers stationed there showered them with tear gas and chemical water that generate bad smell. Many were treated from the effects of tear gas inhalation. In Bilayin, one villager was hit with a rubber-coated steel bullet and two international supporters were kidnapped by Israeli soldiers. Meanwhile, at Al-Masara village on Friday, Israeli troops stopped the villagers and their supporters at the village entrance, then forced them back using rifle butts and batons. No injuries were reported. For IMEMC News, this is Mr. Bajali.
While Palestinians are getting ready to resume indirect talks with Israel, the Israeli Supreme Court makes...
Well, our apologies. Apparently that was the wrong tape from Palestine Today, so I guess we will not have that today's edition of that program. You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our engineer tonight is Ian Gadbury. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews, or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. If you'd like to call any of your elected representatives about issues you've heard on the news, here are the phone numbers, so get a pen or something to write with. Local number for Senator Ron Wyden is 503-326-7525. Senator Jeff Merkley can be reached at 503-326-3386. Oregon Governor Kitzhaber's number is 503-378-3111. And Portland Mayor Charlie Hales can be reached at 503-823-4120. You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath at 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River, 91.9 FM. I'm Paul Rowland.
And I'm Liam Delta. Coming up Monday morning on KBOO at 7, Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on More Talk Radio, the topic is the Pacific Northwest Social Forum, a convergence of people's movements in the Pacific Northwest, with guests Dion Johnson Tyson of the Multimedia Center and Edgar Franks of Community to Community, Comunidad a Comunidad. At 9, the Old Mole Variety Hour. At 10, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein speaks with Eric DePlace with Sightline Institute on the latest developments with oil trains. At 11 on Disability Awareness, Grace Reed spotlights PHC Northwest, Beyond Limitations. It provides broad-based educational training and job opportunities to individuals with mental, physical, and developmental disabilities. And at 11:30 on Health and Healthcare Forum, Roberta Hall speaks with Dr. Martin Donahoe, author of Public Health and Social Justice, about some of the health and environmental consequences associated with growing genetically modified crops. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not yet a KBOO member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Now stay tuned for media analysis from Counterspin